Good morning. Good morning. This is Wanda, your host of Salty Coffee Podcast. Whew. How's everyone doing today? Just going to give it a few minutes for people to walk in. I have another talk later on my major platforms with reintroducing Maria Hernandez, who is the author of Trapped. The screenwriter of Trap, the film. The film came out in 2000. Sorry, had to open the window. 2013. You can find it on Caribbean Channel on Roku. So that's going to be fun. I won't be here in stereo. I will be in YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook. I won't be on Twitter. All right, so I have that ready for this afternoon. Let's see. So, for those of you, the topic is how to lobby effectively for your community, part one. And the reason I have part one is so that I can talk a little bit more about defining lobbying. What does that mean? And that's what I'm going to talk about today. One important thing that I would love for people to know is that, and I'm going to give it a couple of more minutes before we get in. Do I have any announcements? Oh, I have an announcement. I have announcements. You can now find my co-host, the icon, Ronald Smith, on his own website, icon six, sorry, theicon6.com. And you can reach him directly on that website if you are interested in doing a talk with him. His anchor.fm channel is on his website. So please make sure that you follow him and subscribe to his page. It's free. And give him some words of encouragement. Just like he inspires others to think differently. Your perspective on how you feel on things is also important for all of us. So make sure that you follow him and check it out. Check out the page. He has music. He has a couple of things. So it's evolving. It's growing. And the important thing about Salty Coffee Podcast is that we don't tell people, hey, these are the resources. Go figure it out. But if you want me to know, tell you how to do it, pay me $39.99 as a package, and I'll show you. That's not what I do. What I do is take you through the entire process for free, explain to you what's going on in each process and why it's important for you to not give up on your message. And for you to see that you can still fulfill your purpose and your goals without falling into what Mr. Icon considers the matrix or, the social construct, the programming. So I think it's important for us to do that and be mindful. So it's 11 o'clock, and what else? This episode has been brought to you by Bamblish. Bamblish, BAMBLISH.com is a company that services women and their periods. And here's their message. We have a passion for periods and we are not ashamed of it. We are a period boutique shop born out of the thought, am I not too old for leaks? We are out to conquer the period world, fighting leaks, waste, period poverty, and anything else that gets in the way of Mother Nature, all while looking good. Heroes don't just wear their undies. On the outside, we are all heroes if we take small steps towards helping not only ourselves, but our entire global village. We are a new company who just rebranded. We are so excited for this new reset and are looking forward to crush it in the period world. So watch out. Here we come. Please connect with us and watch us grow. Their website is bamblish.com, B as in Bambi, A M as in Mary, BLISH.com, and I will make sure that I have, once I upload this episode to Anchor, I'll make sure that it is on the description of the episode on Anchor so you won't forget. Or you can always visit www.saltycoffeepodcast.com and find the Bamblish company there. So let's get into lobbying. Sorry, I was just drinking some coffee because it's coffee time. Salty coffee. Just in case, for those of you who are not aware of, why salty coffee, the name. If you're new, welcome, welcome, welcome. If you're revisiting, thank you for coming back. They say when you add a little bit of salt to your coffee, it takes the bitterness away. So, hence, salty coffee. Not what generally people think of of salt. She's salty. You're rude. You're upset, you're angry. That's not what that means. So there's a reason why it's called lobbying. A lobby is what a location where a group of people congregate before they either go up to their prospective rooms or offices or where people congregate and talk. And in the past, my understanding was that this is how lobbying worked. Like it actually, people will congregate in the main center of the building entrance of whatever the House or the Senate, the Supreme Court, wherever it was that at the time. And they will congregate and they will talk about their special interests, what's going on, and to try to influence the politicians or elected officials, legislators on what's going on in their communities. So, hence the word lobby. Lobbying is the act of you or a group of special interest people who want to influence public officials. Specifically legislators on a topic or issue that's going on within your immediate community. So many times, when it comes to lobbying and the general population, they always think, oh, lobbyists is really people who get paid, which is true. There are people who get paid by wealthy people to make sure that things don't change for the better of them and their special interest issue. So that's important to know. It is important to know that, one, in the United States, you don't have to be registered or you don't have to have a certificate. You don't have to have like a license to lobby. That may be the case in other countries, but that is not the case in the United States. Anyone in the United States can lobby, and I mean anyone. So it's important to know where that term came from, lobbying, and what does that mean. And we need to cut off the time where we understand that only rich people do that and only people get hired to do that. That is not the truth. Collectively, as a community, as a group of people with a special interest, you can also advocate for a group of people. Let's say if it's for the deaf, for the blind, for special needs children, teachers, nurses, doctors. That's what I'm talking about when I say special interest group. If it's mothers of children who've experienced gun violence, if it's anything like that, anyone in any neighborhood in New York State can either be part of a group where they will send a representative to represent. Hey, Icon, how are you? Sorry, anyone in their group can send a representative to go and advocate for them. And I learned lobbying through two things. One, my union, and two, through my undergraduate degree, which was urban studies and labor studies. So my major was urban, which is learning about the urban environment. What does that take? How does the system work? How do you understand the system so that it can best work for you and your family? Not necessarily beat the system, but to understand how it works so that you're not caught up in, two different things of, being scammed on how to become rich and leave your community, or build your community to the point where then it gets gentrified and it's out, and all of your culture and your traditions are gone. So urban studies is just basically, they like they say, when you get your degree, it's up to you how you want to execute that degree. If you want to execute a urban studies degree to become a politician, to then go into a system that you had a purpose of helping others, but once you're in that system, that's not the case. That can be very tricky. So you have to be very careful of, because people will ask me, urban studies, what are you going to do with that? And what kind of job are you going to get with that? And that's a good question. That's a very good question for people to ask me that, because my purpose and idea of going back to school and learning what I learned had nothing to do with making more money. It had to do with learning the concepts of how this system works for me and knowing how I can get the resources where needed to help to come back and help my community to be better.
Grand rising to you, grand rising to you. Getting ready to walk inside this job, and I need my earbuds so I can listen to the show. But I'm gonna try to tap in where I can. I know the conversation is gonna be great. You go do your thing, babe. Love you, and I know that you're gonna put a lot of people on point today about what they can do in light of things that they didn't know that they could do. So I know it's gonna be a wonderful experience, very informative, and I know you're gonna do a great job. Peace, icons.
Thank you, co-host and significant other. Hello, TT. How are you? So I hope I'm doing a great job. I mean, the good thing about stereo is that we're able to download these conversations and upload them somewhere else where it can be listened to, where people who really need to listen to this information can take it and execute their goals and their passions respectively. So going back to lobbying and your community, again, for those of you walking in or listening, or you just clicked on, it's not what you think. It's like there's certain words that people say, and automatically you think, oh, that's what that is. Lobbyists, yes. Some of them, that's their profession. They don't necessarily have a degree or anything like that, but they have the credentials where they know law, they know legislation, they know the system and how it works to make the people who they're representing, which could be the 1%, the rich people, to get what they want. So could you imagine if we started as people getting together, getting our communities together as a group and making appointments with legislators to say we are enough, enough is enough. And I'll give you an example of how that looks and why it looks the way it looks. And when I started as being an activist, I didn't even know I was an activist. That's the weird part. So one, an activist is just a person who cares enough for their community and their people that they're willing to do things outside of their comfort zone to make things better for the collective, not just for yourself. And that's number one. That's the one thing we need to learn about activism. Activism, in my definition, is when you take your time to learn something, learn the system and how it's not working for your collective group, your collective people, whether that be at work, your family, your building, your street, your neighborhood, your county. It doesn't matter. You collectively, as a person, learn what it is that's working, what's not working, and how you're going to move forward to help those people, to let legislators know, listen, I may have not voted for you because these are the things that you see that you want for your approved people or people that you are affiliated with, but I'm telling you right now, I'm in this neighborhood. You're representing the entire neighborhood. You're just not representing this little group over here, this 1%, or the businesses in that neighborhood. Because always remember, the businesses in your neighborhood are the ones who hire people to lobby for their benefit, not for yours. So when you go to these businesses in your neighborhood and you don't see your people, you don't see your food, you don't see your hair, you don't see anything that relates to you and your culture, that's because the system is looking at your zip code, because that's how it works, your zip code, and saying, hey, majority of these people, their mean income is $48,000, let's say, right? The average mean, the mean, meaning like the middle, right? From that average, there could be a whole, how many people here right now listening have known a family member that owns a business in their community and has stayed in the community and maintained themselves in the community? Maybe in the 70s that has happened, maybe in the 80s, but that doesn't happen anymore. So lobbying, one, the one thing is important for you to know that when you lobby, you don't have to be certified. You don't have to be licensed to do it. Anyone can do it. You just need to make sure that when your group and you're in a group for your community in your area, that you're all thinking the same way, that you're all collectively thinking one thing. What do you want? We want better roads. All right. How are we going to effectively tell our legislators, you need to do this because, look, this person is working. They're paying this much amount of taxes. This person owns all of these buildings. This person, that's how you do it. You have to be collectively. You have to unite within your community. I never understood how people claim a community that they used to live in and they no longer live in and want to come back to make things better. That doesn't happen all the time. They just want to say, hey, look what I survived. Look where I was. And your culture is gone. You're in museums now. You had no leadership at that time to say, hey, this person is being recognized for making a change. You give up because it's like it's just gonna get worse. So let me move here. And then you do go through the same shit. Why would you do that? So people ask me, well, why you never left the hood? Because my purpose is not to leave the hood in worse terms. It's to make sure that our culture, our family unit, our people are taken care of before I leave this earth. I want to make sure that before I leave the Bronx, that I can at least let people know, hey, you have, why is it that it's 60, 70-year-old black ladies in community board meetings? They're the only ones there. Why do you think that is? Because they know the system, they know things are changing, and they can't do it by themselves. And when they invite other younger black or Latino people, oh, we're busy. I have to take care of my kids. Do you know that I had to sit here and I was so happy that with COVID, right, they had to go through Zoom to do their meetings. And now they're all of a sudden going back to in person and they're refusing to do Zoom meetings for community boards. Rich neighborhoods in the Bronx don't do that. They still do their own Zoom meetings because now they're saving money on not having to pay for the location. Everybody gets the chance to do what they have to do in their household and have the Zoom meetings. So think about those things. Think about what you're being told, why you can't do certain things, and open your mouth and say something and make a change until they change it. There's six black ladies in my community district who go to the meetings, and for 3 years they've been complaining about a bus stop that they, so guess what? I'm on the mailing list. I get the emails of the updates about that bus stop. So this is how you have to not only lobby at a higher level where, you know, your state by your state, but at the local level is even more important. And you may say, well, the legislators, you know, they're not going to do shit for us, and they're not supposed to. They're supposed to do shit for people who elected them, right? Who voted for them, because that's the special interest. So yeah, of course, that's how it's going to work. But you do nothing by sitting there and complaining. You have to write a list of people that you know in your community. Hey, are you willing to do, here in New York City, we call it the tenant association. You know how long it's been since I've been here in this building for 11 years, and for 11 years, no one, it's just going to get worse. It's just going to get worse. And I said, okay. I told my board president, nobody wants to get involved because they know you're not going to do anything. That's what I tell them. But I'm living in the building, and I'll be damned if you're going to have this shit fucked up. So I'm telling you right now, this is what the landlord is doing. So since for 11 years, three management office we've had because I've been complaining about them. The first thing I complained about was them charging late fees. If that's an issue, you go to your local district office that represents you and your district. Collectively, you get signatures. We want this removed. Landlords no longer are allowed to charge for late fees. Period. I don't care what the lease says. Because guess what? A lease is subject to change at any time. If they stop giving you hot water or power, that's a breach in your lease. So what, you don't have a right to breach that lease either? You have the right to do that. And that's one of the things that I love about New York, because when you do urban studies and labor studies, that's what you're learning. You're learning the system and not how to fight it back, right? But you're learning the system. so that you're able to engage in learning the system and how to make it better for your community, not the landlord. That's not how that works. And if they don't like it, too bad, because they're in their home in another country, fanning themselves while we're here killing each other and complaining. So I don't do much complaining. Like, my neighbors will be like, oh, look at this shit, blah, 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 wah, wah, wah. Why are you talking to me about it? I came to you in 2010 and I asked you, let's build a tenant association. And you said you had no time. But now you want to catch me in the elevator for 10 minutes complaining about how you shit is not working for you. So these are the things that irks me sometimes, because you tell people the things, you show them, you provide them resources, but they're not in compliance because they don't have time. But they will have time to go out and go for happy hour. They will go find time to go eat or watch a game. But they don't have time ever to look at the things that's happening in the neighborhoods with no solutions to it. So when you go to lobby, whether it's at a immediate local level, your district, your county, however it works in your state, get the people to get. You could start with yourself. Get to know people. Oh, look, they have a special needs group of women, mothers. Look, they have a singles men group. You'll find so much stuff that you didn't even know existed in your own neighborhood. I went to visit my friend in North Carolina, and I told her, hey, I'm going to go, you know, this time at this date. So here are the things that I want to do. Do you know that out of those 10 things, she only knew about two? And this is her state. She only knew about, out of the 10 things that I wanted to do while I went to go visit her, she only knew about two of them. And that's because somebody else invited her to go do those things. So how is it that we're not aware of what's going on in our own neighborhoods, in our backyards? So when it comes to lobbying, you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be licensed. You don't have to be nothing. If you want to go ahead and represent yourself because you have a child with special needs and there's no elevator in the subway stations, or there's no anything in the buses that help you not to have to move to another place, there's no school nearby, then go on your own. Go talk to the teachers. Talk to the Board of Education representative parent coordinator. And tell them, look, this is an issue. I can't be traveling an hour and stuck in traffic to take my child. I need your help to represent me, because nobody in my neighborhood or my county, my community is willing to do this. Go out there and do it yourself. So this is what it says. In politics, lobbying, persuasion, or interest representation is the act of lawfully attempting to influence the actions, policies, or decisions of government officials, most often legislators or members of the regulatory agencies. Essentially, your job during this process is to effectively convince your elected officials to understand how their bill or amendment to a bill or creating reform can affect your community. It is your job to convince them. So here is what I'm going to tell you. I learned about lobbying through my union and being an activist within my union. A lot of people don't realize how much they can learn from their unions. They will complain, nah, the union don't do shit for me. Oh, you know, I'm paying these union dues and them motherfuckers never call me. They never call me back when I'm just saying, you know. I'm quoting what I've heard in 32 years as an activist. That I'm just quoting what I've heard. And I have to tell people all the time, the union is not a set subset organization that's there for you. The union is really just there to have the collective unit of a specific job classification where you have similar interests. Work wage, days off, work week, your hours, your holidays. So collectively, as a union, right, if you're part of a union, you're sitting down with other coworkers talking about your issues, right? And all the union does is that you elect them because they know that they have a special interest in what you're wanting out of your job. Because you know for a fact that your boss is not going to give you what you want them to give you. And I hate it when people come in and say, well, you know, listen, 32 years we've been fighting certain things. And that's if your boss was able to give you those things that you want, why are you fighting for it? New York State has the highest union related work because the rich people who own these businesses will never give you. They will give you the minimum, and we already know that. Because why do we live in a gig economy these days where you have to work more than two jobs or three jobs if you don't have a career way of thinking? Like, you're not a doctor, you're not a lawyer or anything like that, or a nurse, or a certified position. They're not going to give you this shit for free. So that's why in New York State, we all collectively have to get together. That's how we know it's going to work for us. And I know you're thinking, well, not all unions are created equal. They're also corrupted. And you're absolutely right. But in order for you to know where they're corrupted, you need to get involved. You need to find out what they're doing. Unions, at least in New York State, they have to publish their salaries. Their reports of their financial report, that has to be publicized. Nonprofit organizations, most of the time, don't have to do that. So just so you're aware, if you want to know about lobbying, Google it on your state. Every state should have a website. The website for New York is ethics.ny.gov/lobbying-overview. And it gives you instructions. Now you can do it online. We no longer have to like really be there in person, but know that you can do it. Set your list of the things that interest you and your community to make a change, and hold the elected officials, that even the ones that you did not elect, or even the ones that you elected, hold them accountable for their bullshit. Because they told you during some debate that this is what they were going to do. Hold them accountable. Don't sit there and complain to the masses about what's happening in your neighborhood. Coming on here on Stereo or Anchor or anywhere YouTube, that's not going to help. You need to be out there in the front lines, in their face. And I'm going to tell you this, because right now I'm just going to describe what lobbying is, but I'm going to describe on how to do it and the steps to do it on the next talk. Not today, because I have a talk at 12. But understand that if you don't know how your system works when it comes to how it's broken up, the senators, the legislators, the assemblymen, how does that work? Your congressperson, your district council, your public advocate. You know how many people are out there making money supposedly to help us? And they're not being held accountable at all because people don't know. People too busy working three jobs, 10 jobs to make them richer and not you. So when you sit over here and you talk about being an activist, I'm hoping that these are the things that you're also implementing in your daily life. that you're actually out there asking people, what's up? Go to your community board meetings and ask, how can we get more people? Let's just say, at an argument for a number, hey, we only have 8,000 people in this district. And out of the 8,000, you have a meeting once a month, and only the 10 old ladies who've been complaining for the last 10 years show up. What do you think that says? That's a problem. And why is it that on election day in New York State, like today, nobody knows, oh, you got to vote. I voted. Motherfucker, tell me what you're voting for. What are you voting for? Because we know it's not presidential election, which is the one that everybody knows about. And people have always said on here, local elections are important. Local elections are important, but they never say why. They don't explain how you can fix it. They don't explain how you can advocate for others to do it. And again, business people and people who own property, they know the system. They know exactly who to call when there's an issue. They know exactly who to avoid when there's an issue on your end, because you're the consumer, you're the resident. So over and over again, just so you know, lobbying is not a person who is assigned or hired to, that is the truth, right? But you're also in the United States, you're free. And it should be your responsibility and obligation to do it. When you take political science in college, the first thing that they teach you is how to lobby. And they send you out. And they teach you step by step on how to do it, how to research who your congresspeople are, your senators, your legislators, your assembly people. Political science degree. Urban studies, the same thing. You have to know your commerce agency. You have to know who's in charge of what for your neighborhood. If it's noise, they'll tell you which representative does that. But there's always a real, like, immediate person, immediate agency that collects the information, right? So here in New York State, our district council meetings are the ones that are like just for this zip code area, right? We meet with them. And then within those meetings, once a month, there's a representative from the borough president's office. There's a representative from the city council. There's a representative from the Senate. There's a representative from the Congress. There's a representative. And when we don't see those representatives in that meeting, because it's only once a month, when we don't see it, we collectively in that group start calling their office, and they give you the phone numbers of the people. Our police precinct, they go there once a month. They tell us what they're doing in the neighborhood. And if we have an issue with it, we talk to them right there and then. And they are obligated to give us their cell phone number. Their working cell phone number, the representative that goes to these meetings for the precinct that represents my area, call when they say text me first, because don't call me, right? You damn right. Listen, I don't feel safe going to my building right now. Can you send someone over? And they do. So could you, that's me. Could you imagine everybody in my neighborhood doing that every day? They'll make changes. They'll do some reform. So find out what's going on in your neighborhoods. Find out what bills are being, because right now, this is the election, but the budget for New York State deadline is always, so we go lobby in March and April, and then the budget, I believe, the deadlines for all the budgets where they have to sign them, the governor has to sign it, is in May. So I always told my union, no, we're not going to lobby in March and April. We're going to do that shit throughout the entire year. And one of the things that I did not like about my union is because they would lobby with things that were non-monetary. I'll give you an example. So at some point, there was a bill that if you owed taxes, right? If you're a truck driver and you or just a driver, whatever, and you owed $12,000 in taxes for 1 year, your license will be automatically revoked, right? We were lobbying because the governor wanted to change that from 12,000 to 5,000. And we thought that was just crazy, right? But I'm also thinking, well, damn, if they owe 12,000, how much did they make and what's up? You know, like what's going on? We don't know what's going on. And that's why I didn't like some of the issues that were being brought up within our collective because I needed them to explain to me why someone will owe that much as a truck driver. Is it because they're making 200,000 that they owe 12,000? Is it because the gas went up? Like what's the criteria here of why it's important for them to advocate for them not to bring it down from 12,000 to 5,000? I'll give you another example. In New York State, if you live in an apartment, right? Rental apartment, and your rent went over $2,000 a month, your landlord had the right to, at any given moment within your lease, to raise it to 3,000 without notification. So the bill was called vacancy decontrol. So vacancy decontrol just basically means that, okay, Salty Coffee has lived in this apartment for 10 years, and she lives in this apartment where she's paying $12,000, right? I'm sorry, $1,200 a month. Let's just say 12 years later, she moves out and the rent was, you know, because it raises every month to 2% or 1%. She leaves, she moves out. The landlord does not have the right to raise that rent more than 2% when the new person is coming in. They can only charge you but 2% increase. That's it. They can't charge you, oh, for renovation and all that. What they wanted to do was after 2,000, that's the cap, we're going to raise it to whatever. So forget Salty Coffee and her family. I don't care. It's going to go up to 2,000. Those are the things that as people who live in communities where either you rent or you buy or you own, even if you're the owner, you have to know the rights of the tenants and things that you're and a lot of owners do, because at least here in New York State, I know that if once you become a landlord, you have to like there are rules and regulations that you cannot and they'll say tenants have more rights than the landlords in New York State. And there's a lot of landlords that don't like to buy, purchase property to rent in New York, but they still get their money, so I don't care. They'll still get their money. And I'm gonna tell you something else that happens of why it's important to know about lobbying and going into your prospective communities and to have these conversations. We went to lobby every year for about 10 years for paid family leave, right? New Jersey and California were the only two states at the time that we knew that had paid family leave. New York did not have that. For 10 years, we fought it and fought it and fought it. And finally, I think it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we finally had paid family leave. Do you know how important that is for the working class? So another thing about lobbying is don't give up. Don't say, oh, it's never going to change. Oh, it's never going to change. It you have to be consistent and you have to be organized in how you do that. And collectively, no one can come into that group and say, well, I disagree with, because I'm a landlord and, no, I know how it works for me. That's not how collective works. You're either all thinking alike, you're all thinking the same way, or you don't do it at all. And just go ahead and do it individually and say, you know what, this is not for me because I'm a landlord. And let me tell you, there were another important thing, which I'm going to get into lobbying, I guess, part two, because I do have a talk at 12. Don't just meet with the people that represent you in your district. Meet with other legislators that represent other areas as well within your state. You know why? Because in one little place, they have this little thing, this little clause where, yeah, that doesn't work for us. And I'm going to tell you how. So in New York State, you have the five boroughs and then you have upstate, right? Upstate, they have this thing where they don't want big businesses like Spectrum or, cable companies. So their Wi-Fi sucks. So people are migrating upstate, right? Because now people have the money and the means to go and purchase homes, right? Or purchase land. And they can't get a Wi-Fi company. They got to get this little company, which I get it. I get it. You want to sustain small businesses. You want small businesses to open up, right? And to do more and not just have these bigger cable companies or internet companies, right? You want small bit. You want to be able to open up your own satellites and stuff like that. You want to buy airtime. You want to invest in that. So I get it. So let me play these two messages.
How you doing today, Saudi? How you doing today, Saudi Coffee? I'm sitting here listening to you. So, okay, New York, we know that's a left-leaning navy blue state. It's historical. And you were talking about they only about to raise it 2% on the new people. Why would, in the capitalism, why would investors who need to raise it, maybe to renovate or whatever? Why would they want to renovate? What's the incentive to make it better? Why would they want to be totally controlled on some investment that they put their money into? I don't understand that. Why do the did the tenants who didn't put their money got so much control? I don't understand that.
So this is why. In New York State, when you're a developer, guess what? My tax dollars goes to you for tax free money. So New York State says if you're a developer and you want to be a landlord, we're going to give you this space for up to 50 years of free tax. You ain't got to pay a dime. So why should I, the tenant, go to work, pay taxes that you already got as a developer, right? You already got this as an owner. Why should it be on you? This building was developed for you to make money, right? But you're also getting tax-free incentives. That's the incentive. That's why New York supports their tenants. Because tenants, a lot of them don't know that our own tax money is going, income tax, mind you, is going to these developers to build these buildings and businesses. So yeah, no, it shouldn't be about you, because you're gonna make the money regardless. And even if, let's say, the tenant is not able to pay their rent, right? You're still gonna get that money from the state. As a landlord and developer, you're still gonna get that money. And that's why when they build these buildings, you'll notice that gradually the shit depletes, it starts turning into shit because the landlord already got what he wanted. He got the money he needed to invest and put in somewhere else. Oh yeah, let me build this building over here. Let me focus on this area now. Because this shit is a shit show, hell. Let them fucking kill themselves. Nobody wants to move in that neighborhood anyway. That's why. So don't come Don't come to me as a developer talking about I can't use the community room or I can't use it for safety purposes when I already know that the state already gave you incentives, cutoffs, and money. And through COVID, they all got paid. And they lie. They lie. They'll say, oh, yeah, that one, that unit was filled. And the fucking building was empty. And I'm just saying, you know, the building was empty. I'm not saying it was completely empty, but I know that they'll find a way. And this building here is only 27 units. It's very small. It's very small. So they don't give a shit. People with the money that my landlord and developer has, it's not enough for them to fight for it. And that's why it turns into a shit show. It turns into chaos. It turns into violence in the neighborhood. It turns into trash because they're moving on to other areas to gentrify or to fix or to pretend that they're doing something. And that's why as people, we need to, and communities, we need to be mindful about how the system works and who we should be going to fight for those things. That's why.
I just wanted to say hello, Salty Coffee. I'm here at work, so I'm just really listening, and I'm loving this. This is information I didn't know, so I'd like to thank you for that. And shout out to you and my big brother. Oh, my God, I didn't know. I'm happy for you guys. Love y'all. Later.
Hey, TT, thank you so much. I mean, this is just part one. I just wanted to see feedback and see what people will say and think. But this is something that I did for years. I still do, but post-COVID, it's been a little bit more difficult and less transparent because it's always good to go into their faces and meet them in their faces. And when we couldn't do that through COVID, specifically through COVID, it was a little bit harder. And this new governor, who's a female, I don't even know her name because it's just been chaotic because, again, you start at the local immediate level and then you work your way up. But I'm going to play these last two messages and hopefully I can do part two later on today or later on this week. But if you're interested, please make sure you subscribe to theicon6.com, where most of the struggle talks will be from there. And you can also visit Salty Coffee Podcast so that you can see when I'm going to have the schedule of the talks, either here or outside of stereo.
So you said exactly what I was getting ready to say. It turns into ghettos now because of rent control. So don't New York think that if that cycle keeps happening, it's a bad idea, and don't let developers get tax breaks like that so that way they can invest their own money into it. So that way
absolutely
they got more of an incentive to, because they're putting their own money into it. And that way the tenants don't have that much control. But there's a lot of bad tenants too who are trying to play a lot of games.
Absolutely.
So that way the landlords got more control because the government didn't put their tax dollars into it. Capitalism rolled the way it's supposed to roll instead of New York trying to be kind of more of a socialist type of society.
No, I agree. I mean, it all depends on the individuals. My point today is don't come and complain after you've been told what's out there and how it works. I'm not complaining. I'm not complaining because I know exactly who to call, what to do, and it's not for me. It's just not for me. I don't think individualized. I'm thinking of the community and the people that are moving forward because, of course, everybody leaves, right? Everybody wants better for their family, and they'll leave. But I'm talking about collective.
But does the tenants are still looking to buy into the block where you live? You're saying if they have so much rights, why don't they just buy it for themselves? I'm assuming so.
that's just not how it works in New York. That's just not how it works. And what I'm saying is, learn the system so that you don't get cheated. There's no, if you go to Paris, they'll tell you in Paris, you cannot own anything in Paris. They'll lease it out to you for a couple of years and then it's gone. Same thing, similar in New York State. You can lease the plot. You can, as a developer, you can lease the plot, but they don't own this land. They just leasing, borrowing the land to build a building to make money.
Great job, babe. You did a great job. Great explanation. Even a great question, Dark Truth, or perspective. I love how that worked out. Salute to the comment and salute to the reply. Salute to everybody in the foundation. Again, you did a great job, babe. Very informative. It's always good to know what your rights are.
Well, thank you. I mean, I'm not here to please you, Icon. No, I'm just kidding. No, I think we need to have more conversations about what's really going on as opposed to what's going on. You know, I know different states have different variables when it comes to owning or leasing or developing or, and I get what Jonathan, welcome, and Dark Truth are saying. I get what Jonathan is saying. So if these are the incentives and lobbying and you can go to lobby, I just, today's purpose of this talk is just to initiate the conversation about lobbying. And I'm giving examples of how people need to learn. You don't need a degree. I shouldn't have to have gone to learn or to have a degree on urban and labor studies to know about how the cities work. And that's the problem. Only when you're a political science major or you're, you know, urban or labor studies, whatever major, is when you learn these things. And the reason why people take urban studies is to either become an activist, a public advocate, or a politician. The difference between those who pursued the politician route and me is that I noticed that once you go in with a purpose of wanting to help other people, it's not necessarily going to turn out that way. You're going to have to really please the other people. Hold on. You fall so into the trap that your purpose of going in to serve your people ends up not serving the people that you wanted to serve in the beginning. Like my congressman, Richie Torres, he was my council person from my district. And he's now congress for my district. And if you look at what he was able to do when he was at this local level, has drastically changed to what he's not for the better, in my opinion. He's struggling. He's struggling a lot. But again, there's a couple of people and groups of people that would know how to catch you and put you in that, like, no, this is not about your people. This is not about the hood and the ghetto people. Those people we can put aside right now. These are the people that we need to sustain and keep in mind when we're making changes to legislation, because these are the people that are going to be supporting and paying your salary. And that's the shit that hurts. And that's why I would never become an advocate in that way. Because you fall into the system and it just becomes chaos. So with that said, thank you so much. I'm going to be on, if you click on my page here, I'm going to have a live at 12 o'clock. with Maria Hernandez, who is the author of Trap, and she's the screenwriter of Trap. And this is me reintroducing her because she had to change her way of living post-COVID to take care of us, of a brother who's in special needs right now. So I think that talk is important for all of us. So stay tuned. I will do How to Lobby Effectively for Your Community Part 2 very soon. So make sure you follow each other. Dark Truth, thank you so much for your input. I know you want to say more, and I would love to hear from you more because I know where you're at right now. Icon, thank you so much. TT Wolf, thank you so much for stopping by and leaving a comment. D. Williams and Jonathan, thank you. And I hope you all have a great day.